All right. So this is the third shiur in the Morning of Vuchim. And if you recall, we discussed in the previous shiur the difficulty sometimes of parsing out what the structure of this work is. If you see in the, those of you who have the Strauss edition or the Pinas edition of the translation here, so Strauss, in the beginning, sort of lays out how he tries to organize the various structure of the book. Okay, and you know there are others who have various structures as well. What you'll note is that the first big chunk talks about biblical terms applied to God and terms suggesting multiplicity in God. Okay. And, I think that the easier way of putting this is basically that there are three sections to the guide, and the first section of the guide deals with what is God. In other words, if you wanted to give the upshot about what is, of what the first section is of the Morning of Vuchim, I think a fair way of saying it would be, all right, well, what is God? Okay, now, the Rambam sort of does this in multiple ways, but the two major sections within this grouping is A, proving that God doesn't have a body, the incorporeality of God. Okay? That's what God is not, right? And then, from there, going on to say, and by the way, God is not a lot of things. So I mean, his theory of the negative attributes is, which is to say that A, God doesn't have a body, and B, anything we say about God has to be in a negative form. That is to say, we only say what God is not, we can't say exactly say what God is. Okay? And from there, you get to what sort of ends the first section and begins the second section, continues in the second section, about the nature of trying to prove God's existence. Okay? Now, the reason why the order has to be this way, right, is because if you don't do it this way, then, well, you could do it in order, right? You could say, let's prove God's existence. God's existence, you know what God is, right? So there's a real structure here in terms of saying, let's first figure out what, everyone's big jokes around here, let's first figure out what God is, what we mean when we say by God, and then let's go and prove his existence. And then there's a lot of, there's a logical order to that as well, and, it makes a lot of sense. However, there is also clearly another goal here, which isn't just a logical progression, but is also a pedagogical move. Okay? As we saw, the Rambam, in his fifth of his contradictions, remember he gives seven contradictions, types of contradictions you can find in works, the fifth of which relates to pedagogical moves, in which it will seem that earlier in the book or in different writing, it says one thing and someone says something else. And in truth, it's not really a contradiction, but rather initially he was throwing out an idea to give you a general sense, and later on he was sharpening it. Sharpening it sometimes to the point where it contradicts, not just complements or nuances, but sometimes even contradicts what was stated earlier. But is necessary on a pedagogical level. And there's no doubt that the Rambam has this strategy in mind. His book, he tells you, had this strategy. And I think here as well. The first thing the Rambam wants to do is get rid of the most basic, in his mind, juvenile beliefs about what is God. And then from there, to get much more sophisticated. Okay? So there's no doubt that this is a mahalach, if you will, a process, right? In which the Rambam is trying on a pedagogical level in order to bring the student to a greater appreciation of what is God by first and foremost getting rid of what's in there. Let's put it this way. If a student comes to you and says to you, what is God? Okay? So someone walks off the street and says, what is God? So you can tell them what you think God is, right? But if you know more like, what the person is thinking, what is God, then it's easier to work with them and talk to them. Right, so what he's basically assuming is that strategically the way to do this is to say, okay, I know people out there think that this is God. Let me debunk that, right? Because it needs to be debunked. in order then to answer the question. But until I can't answer that question until I sort of get rid of all these foreign ideas. Have you ever tried explaining something to someone, right, in which their preconceived notions are so far from what you have to say that you feel like you're just going in circles because they keep on saying to you, oh, you mean this? You're like, no, I don't mean that. Uh-huh. Oh, you mean this, right? And you go back and forth. And finally you realize, like, you know, like they're just so stuck in their conception of what they think you're saying or that you're going to say, they just can't understand what you're saying. Okay, so it's the same thing here. The Rambam wants to get rid of the false notions of God, and therefore he starts off in this order, which tells you something very interesting. Namely, the Rambam feels a need to spend many, many chapters, right? A solid, depending on you count them, whatever it might be, but a solid 50 chapters on proving that God doesn't have a body. You know, why is that? Right? Well, one reason is simply because there is just so many psukim in the Torah, right, that seem to indicate, not psukim in the Torah also, Chazal, that seem to think of God in corporeal terms. He's got a lot of passages to explain. There's a lot, you know, a lot of passages. And as we said last time, or two times ago, I don't remember anymore, but the Rambam, Mor Nevuchim, is in many ways a book of biblical interpretation. Meaning it's not on the daf, so to speak. Right? In other words, think of it that way. In other words, it's like using a Truma Sedesh and explaining the Gemara. Right? In other words, Truma Sedesh is not on the... There's certain, you know, the Itur, whatever it might be. But there's elements of interpretation when Simon brings halachic psak. So same thing here as well. When the Rambam is talking philosophy, he's giving a biblical interpretation, it's just not the seder of psukim.
Why does Rambam spend all this time debunking and then bringing it? Why doesn't he just bring it all and say everything else is debunked, meaning debunk everything through what he wants to bring over later on?
What do you mean? I'm sorry, explain.
Meaning, well, he wants to say these are not the ways of Hashem, etc. Later on he says, what is? What exists away? Why doesn't he just say what he thinks is the way and therefore debunking it?
Ah, so I think this is precisely the issue, right? There's the first problem, the reason why the Rambam has to do this is because there are a lot of psukim to deal with. But the second is because he knows that there are a lot of people out there who think that God has some form of corporeality, right? And it's an historical phenomenon, and you have to, we sort of have to remove ourselves from like this 21st century mentality, because for us, the notion of thinking that God has some form of corporeality is probably very foreign, right? Whereas most of us don't think that God has any form of physicality, okay? But that was clearly, and Rambam tells you this, right? I mean, there are other sources, and we'll hopefully discuss this more in depth next time, but the Rambam's telling you there are a lot of people out there who think that God has some form of corporeality. And by the way, right, lest you think that this is such a crazy idea, note the fact that there are many people in various religions around the world who think that the divine is found in some form of corporeality. Right? In one form or another. Again, I know there are all sorts of theological conceptions and various religions, and, you know, I'm not trying to do you here about what's considered, you know, actually corporeality or not. Right? But there is a very a widespread belief that the divine, as it were, has some form of physical manifestation, in broad terms. Okay? And by the way, if you think about it, I actually just heard someone speak about this. Derech Agav, he said to me, a very prominent professor of medieval Jewish philosophy, came up with this corporality issue. He said to me, listen, I think the majority of Jews, from Jews out there, conceive of God in corporeal terms. I mean, if you ask them, does God have a body? Say, chas v'shalom, because you give me karma, whatever it might be. But, right, if you were to ask them, how do they conceive of God, they will end up falling into some form of corporeal trap.
You can't explain something.
That's right. Because it's very hard, you know, it's the notion of the divine, particularly as we're going to see the way the Rambam defines what God is not very easy to comprehend. And it's not only an intellectual issue, it's also an existential issue or emotional issue, depending on different people, right? Where that there's something very tempting about being able to conceive of this great power, loving power, as something in the flesh. Right? In other words, someone's, you know, someone's talking to someone
Why is Christianity so tempting to people? Why are people excited about it? And I happen not to be very tempted by Christianity. I mean, I'm not saying there's always a question. If I was born Christian, would I, you know, turn to Judaism, whatever it might be? Okay, you know, I never know, right?
Because you can do any sins they want, and they're automatically
forgiven. So that's like a very medieval Jewish, like, derogatory perspective on it. They also live a nuanced on it. But there's no doubt grace, the notion of grace, is a very tempting notion. Right, but there's also in her is the notion of saying that there's some form of physical manifestation of the divine for a lot of people is very tempting. Okay? And by the way, it could be, and the Rambam might necessarily disagree with this, but I shouldn't say that. Well, let's see if the Rambam would disagree with this. But there could be that one of the elements of why the Torah is written as if God is a personality is to make God a much more personable thing which you have a relationship with. Because as we're going to see, you're going to ask yourself, once we get through the Morah, you're going to ask yourself, well, what is this relationship I have with God, according to the Rambam, once I defied God this way? Right? Notice his definition is going to lead to all sorts of questions about divine providence and miracles and prophecy and all sorts of difficulties, which, if you just read the Torah, right? The Torah makes God seem like a very intervening, personable a figure. Right? Imminence. Okay, the story of Eov, I'm saying, but I have only Eov, many other stories. Right? Which is a very tempting, you know, this depiction of relationship with God. Kobe.
I think also surrounding at least a lot of Chagim, there's a lot of corporeal images that are used to describe, you know, God having the Book of Life open and describing us in the Book of Life and opening and closing the gates and, you know, when God takes the people out of Mitzrayim, you know, having the outstretched arm and all these different images that often come up that make you think of a corporeal God, which often makes it easier for that to then.
Yeah, you got the God up there, and they got the Malachim, and they're sitting there, and they're trying to, you know, they're figuring out should it be the Book of Life and Book of Death, and you know, should give this person a full shlema and all sorts of things. 100%. You're right that, and particularly Aser Yemichu, the Yamim Noraim, is definitely that theme, but other holidays as well. But certainly. By the way, one of the interesting things is to see how the Rambam treats, you know, Aser Yemichuva and all these notions, and how does it reconcile between the Midrash, says the Mishnah Torah, and the Morah. We'll discuss some of those issues as a whole, but 100%. And by the way, those ideas aren't coming because, you know, people in the 20th century, you know, need someone to feel, you know, make them feel good, right? In other words, these are chazals, meaning, and for that matter, they're made psukim. Okay? Now, this brings us to the next point, which is as follows. So, the Rambam, but I'm highlighting this fact as well, because I think I mentioned to you that, I think 2 shiurim ago, that people think that the purpose of the Morah Nevuchim is to work out, reconcile, revelation, and reason. And that's true here, right? That's true here, because reason makes it impossible to believe in a corporeal God, and therefore he's got to interpret the psukim accordingly. Yeah, that's true. Okay, but as I mentioned, there's a second purpose to the Morah Nevuchim, which is no less important, which is to debunk the false beliefs about Judaism within the Jewish community. It's mystical beliefs, other beliefs over might be, and this is clearly one of his agendas here. Okay, and he's merciless, by the way, on the figures who believe. In other words, and later on we'll see this. I think it's 125. I don't remember exactly 125. We'll get to it. Maybe 135. Yes, 135. In 135, the Rambam says here, listen, there are many things that I can understand how a person who's not that smart can't get. Right? There's limits to people's knowledge and theology, but not the incorporeality of God. There's no excuse for a person to believe that God is corporeal. Right? And he's merciless. He's absolutely merciless on them. And therefore he says, listen, if you're stupid, you can still get this concept. Right? So you might not be able to finish the rest of the book, but at least get through this. He's really, really strong in this point. Okay. Now, having established the pedagogy here, now, just to make the structural point, though, even though and the structure, the Rambam is going to focus on the next 50 chapters, more or less, on the issue of corporeality, in one form or another, there's a lot of things that come up in the middle as well. Right? And this relates, of course, to the seventh contradiction that we spoke about. Right? The Rambam says that I'm going to purposely, in this book, write in a manner in which I'm going to say something here and say something there, and you're going to have to work out the pieces here. Okay? And now part of it, just because it comes up agav, so he starts, goes on tangents. But there's no accidental tangents in this book. That's, I think, you have to assume the Rambam knows very well. He's going to say something about the nature of human beings here, and he's going to throw something in later on, and God, wherever it might be, and you just have to, you know, have a good guide to figure out the guide, so to speak, right? In other words, you got to remember those passages. Okay? All right. Now, so in terms of our order, we're going to focus on the corporeality issue a bit for probably this week, next week, and then we'll come back to some of the other issues also as we move forward. Okay, now, as I stated beforehand, the Rambam, as this book as a whole, is clearly trying to reconcile reason and revelation, and as a whole, the relationship between the Bible and philosophy. This is a very important question in this work. Now, this is a very interesting thing that we're going to see in a number of passages in the Rambam. But what would you say, if you think about it now, is what's the greatest source of people being turned off the derech or becoming apikorsim? Today, what would you say, huh?
Laziness,
okay, what else?
Misinformation,
yeah, what else?
Ignorance.
You know, today, I'm saying, why are people apikorsim? You say science.
Rationality.
Taiva, right? All sorts of things. I thought someone was going to say secular college. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you know, there might be. In other words,
not everybody here knows about that.
Never knows about that. Okay. Haven't been there, you know. But I'm saying, but in other words, you would think that if you would ask someone, listen, what's the biggest thing that throws people off the derech, so to speak, at least in an intellectual level, and it's competing theologies, competing philosophies, whatever it might be. Right? In other words. So that's, the Rambam definitely knows of this issue and problem, but what he's going to tell you with regard to this issue and many other issues as well is the biggest source of apikorsis, meaning the biggest cause of apikorsis is that people learn Tanakh. Right? Which is why yeshivas don't learn Tanakh.
I actually had a rabbi in high school who said that.
No. You got this from the Rambam, okay? Now, what, that you should learn Tanakh?
I mean, we asked him, why don't we learn Tanakh? He's like, because learning too much Tanakh is bad for your emunah.
Okay, that's a frightening statement in many ways. But it could be, I'll be down the Katzchut and assume that he's only referring to the Rambam here, okay? Because the Rambam is very, very, very wary of a number of psukim and Maimar Chazal, for that matter, which can lead people astray. Okay, and then let's take a look at let's like Breishit Perek Aleph. Yeah. Yeah, no. Before you get there is let's like all sorts of Christian things, or maybe not like suffering servant passages. I'm not talking about that. Those are, you know, you can get around those. These are more fundamental. Take a look in the beginning of chapter 1:1. The Rambam is going to try now to explain Demut, Tselem, and Demut. Okay, and it says as follows: people have thought that in the Hebrew language, image, right, tzelem, denotes the shape and configuration of a thing. This supposition led them to the pure doctrine of corporeality of God on account of his saying, let us make man in our image after our likeness. What is that pasuk? Nasa adam b'tzelmenu k'dmutenu. That sort of sounds like, right? I mean, if you're just right, reading that pasuk, and you're just like, you know, you just open a work. Let's say we're looking at the Bible, Chalila, right? Let's say we're looking at the Bible, you know, Chalila, right? Just as like we would look at some, you know, Epic of Gilgamesh or some ancient Mesopotamian, you know, narrative. And we read the story of the narrative, which, by the way, would be much longer. It's a very interesting fact. It says something a lot about the Torah. It's a whole thing that the creation story in the Torah is very short. In other cultures, particularly the ancient East, is very long. So it's very interesting in its own, right? Okay? And but you would open this up, Chalila, as such a book, And you look at it and you say like, well, I guess this culture believes that God has some form of corporeality. Or you could be, you could think that. It's not crazy. So he says, for they thought that God has a man's form, I mean his shape and configuration. The pure doctrine of the corporeality of God was a necessary consequence to be accepted by them. They accordingly believed in it and deemed that if they abandoned this belief, they would give the lie to the biblical text. That they would even make the deity to be nothing at all unless they thought that God was body provided with a face and a hand, like them in shape and configuration. Okay? Now, what's he saying here? He's saying people who want to be firm, right? They want to believe in this text. Right? This isn't an issue. Again, this is one of those interesting issues where it's not a problem of people don't taiva, whatever you want to call it. They don't want to be religious. No! They want to be religious, and therefore they say, all right, I got to take the text for what it means. And if I don't, it's a ki'ilu as if I'm denying God.
It's
carrot. Huh? It's carrot. No, don't get stuck in that. There is, first of all, carrots have their own forms of interpretation as well. Texts have interpretations. In other words, but beyond that, they're just saying, listen, we have to interpret this text. I want to believe in this test. God's telling me he's got a body. Okay. And therefore it says as follows. Now, however, he is, in their view, bigger and more splendid than they themselves, and the matter of which he is composed is not of flesh and blood. As they see it, this is as far as one can go in establishing the separateness of God from other things. Okay? Now, this is interesting. With the Rambam, we'll hopefully discuss this more next week, because there has been a number of studies about what exactly some medieval Jews believed in terms of the corporeality of God, but many of which have a notion of, he says around here, they're bigger and resplendent, not of flesh and blood. Meaning, there is a notion, even within those who believe of God's corporeality, which Ram knows well, not think of it as just like Andre the Giant. In other words, right? Or, you know, Andre the Giant is? Someone's a little bit closer to my age. Wikipedia, Andre the Giant, and, you know, actor, wrestler.
He's in the Princess
Bride. Yeah, Princess Bride. Yeah, the giant. Yeah. Okay, Andre. Anyway, so, in any case, it's not like that. Meaning the notions of, but they thought he was bigger, some form of transparency, not exactly flesh and blood, but of corporeal nature. Okay? Now, with respect to that which ought to be said in order to refute the doctrine of corporeality, which can have no true reality unless one disproves his corporeality, you shall know the demonstration of all this from his treatise. Okay? He says, I'm going to disprove this notion. But he's very clear here, right? The belief in God is utterly irreconcilable with the notion of God's corporeality. Because one of his definitions of a God is going to be about the unity of God, and anything which has corporeality by its nature can be divided and that divisible and can't be. Okay? But before we get to that, let me explain to you what this term means. Now I say that in the Hebrew language, a proper term designating the form as well known among the multitude, namely the form that which is the shape and figuration of a thing, is toar. Okay? In other words, if I want to say someone is good looking, what do you say? Yifator, right? Okay? And I think, of course, a number of psukim along those lines. Toar as shape and configuration. This term is also applied to artificial form, etc. Those terms are never applied to the deity. Toar is never used, may be exalted far more from this. The term image here is tselem, right? The term image, on the other hand, is applied to the natural form, I mean to the notion virtue of which a thing is constituted as a substance, becomes what it is. It is the true reality of the thing insofar as the latter is that particular being. Okay? Now, what the Rambam here is stating to us is Tselem refers to, what does Tselem refer to? The form. Okay? Now, what is form? What is form? So this, I'm sorry?
More inner.
Well, form, he's telling you, is what the true substance, the essence. Okay? The essence. Now, what is the essence of man? In man, that notion is that from which human apprehension derives. Okay, in other words, for him, he's going to elaborate this more as it goes further here. But for him, the true essence of human beings is its intellectual faculties. Okay? That is the tzelem. Tzelem is form. Now, what he means by form here is he means form versus matter. Okay? This is a complete adoption of Aristotelian viewpoint, in which Aristotle establishes notions of form and matter. And this is a very central theme in Aristotle. And we start seeing already in the introduction, the Rambam believes that the matter of human beings, it was what causes all the problems. Because the matter leads to sensuality and physicality. The form of human beings is the Tzelem Elohim, which is the intellectual apprehension.
But didn't we talk about this in chapter 2? Sort of that Adam and Chava didn't have any of that intellectual knowledge before they ate from the...
So this is what he's going to say. He's not going to say that in chapter 2. And what we're going to see is the distinction between true and false and good and evil in chapter 2. We'll get there. This is going to be very important. Okay? We have to define what those terms are.
Because they're created without that.
That's right. That's precisely what's going to happen is that... you're jumping ahead, but just to give you the basic idea, is that if you define human beings by knowledge, by intellectual capabilities, then, the Torah tells us to only get certain knowledge after the quote-unquote fall, or after all the sin. Right? And the Rambam's going to say, no, that's not true. We have to distinguish the different types of knowledge, whoever it might be. Okay? But that is itself, and therefore, is on account of this intellectual apprehension that is said of man, in the image of God created he him. Right? B'Tzelem Elohim. What does B'Tzelem Elohim mean? What is B'Tzelem Elohim? I'm sorry? B'Tzelem Elohim means the form of God, and here the form is referring to the intellect, intellectual apprehension. Okay. Now, what is Demut? So Demut, later on, he goes and says, so when it says, Nasa Adam B'Tzelemenu, B'Tzelemenu means what? Let us make him, right, in our form, in a form being in terms of the intellectual. Okay. Now, what is Demut? So he says, it too signifies likeness in respect of a notion. Okay? Whereas with the idea being, right, that there is a likeness, right, in terms of certain elements to it. Okay? But it doesn't mean, right, what does that mean in this case? So that's referring to, again, towards the end of 1:1. Now, man possesses as his proprium something in him that is very strange, that's not found in anything else that exists under the sphere of the moon, namely intellectual apprehension. Okay? In the exercise of this, no sense, no part of the body, none of the extremities are used, and therefore this apprehension is likened to the apprehension of the deity, which does not require an instrument, although in reality is not like the latter apprehension, but only appears so to the first stirrings of opinion. Now, this is very important. Because what's the Rambam telling us here? He's saying, well, Nasa Adam B'Tzelemenu K'Dmutenu, right, is basically saying we're going to make some form of similarity in terms of intellectual apprehension. But no, right away he tells you, don't think that God is just like the smartest human being. Right? Because God is not on a totally different scale. But the Torah told us, nonetheless, Nasa Adam B'Tzelemenu K'Dmutenu, because it wants to give us a sense of both what human beings are, their form, and also a sense of what God is, even though later on we're going to have to clarify that God is on a different scale entirely. Right? But on a pedagogical move, this is precisely Rambam's pedagogical move, which is the Torah's pedagogical move. We throw out the idea of getting the notion of human beings be defined by their intellectualness, intellectual apprehension, right? Because of the divine intellect conjoined with man, right? And this is precisely the essence of what human beings are. Intellectual apprehension. Okay? But it has nothing to do with any form of corporeal shape. Right? That, the terms in the Torah for that phenomenon are something different entirely. If you take a look at 1:7, you'll see here as well, the Rambam talks about the psukim in the image, right? All these image of God, right? That those psukim, and whether it's Breishit, Perikei, Pasuk Gimel, and others, and various points. But this is a very important established, something that he wants to establish from the get-go here, which is to say God is not corporeal. And the first term that throws people off into apikorsim, meaning Nas Adam Betzalmenu Kidmutenu, is a total mistranslation. Because Selim and Demut have nothing to do with shape and configuration. Okay. Now, what we have to figure out is, having established this, right, well, who did think God had a body or some sort of corporeality? And why?
Okay.
I'm sorry?
People who did Avodah Zarah.
Ah, so we are tempted to think, oh, it's only people who did Avodah Zarah.
No, not only, but...
So as we're going to see Mitzvah next week, right, there is a, seems to be a list of Jews, not literal list, but I'm saying, but a number of Jews in medieval time period who definitely think God has some corporeality, which includes... seems to include various Rishonim, and might even include Rashi and the Ravid, depending on who you believe and interpret. It is very famous that the Ravid, when the Rambam says anyone believes in God's corporeality in the Mishnah Torah, the Ravid jumps all over him and says on him, how can you say such a thing when there are many people greater than you, Rambam, who believe that? Now, that from that passage, we don't see the Ravid saying he believes that. He just says that a lot of people. But there are other passages that some want to claim that maybe Rashi, maybe Ravid, maybe others actually think that God has some form of corporeality.
The Rambam seems responding to those.
100%. And there's certainly maybe Maimri Chazal, which seem to lead them astray as well. Rav Moshe Taku is going to be a figure we're going to discuss, and others, who certainly seem to think that God has some form of corporeality, raising the question of, you know... are highlighting the fact that the Rambam needs to refute these opinions. And by the way, this is one of the great successes of the Rambam.
If the Ravid agrees with the Rambam, how can you jump all over him and say they're great people and you can disagree with you?
Because in the Mishnah Torah, he's just basically saying, listen, I don't necessarily believe that, but that if people do believe that, it doesn't make them an apikoros. See, remember, the Rambam isn't just, yeah, he's jumping on the apikoros, but remember, the Rambam's not just saying, you know, listen, you got it off here, but like, you know, whatever, okay, so you know. No, the problem is saying it, apikoros. As we're going to see later on, I have a discussion in this coming weeks, the Rambam doesn't believe in like mercy for people who are accidental heretics. Meaning, let's say you're led astray because you were reading the Torah, so maybe you should get a better place, you know, still get into Olam Haba because you're a kriyer b'shoyeg, right? The Rambam doesn't believe in that. It's largely based on how he understands Olam Haba. Olam Haba is just based on your intellectual, you know, apprehension. So whether or not, you know, it's accidental or purposeful, at the end of the day, you either get it or you don't.
That's why people don't like the Rambam. Okay. Olam Haba with young children.
I'm sorry?
Which is why people get very upset with what the Rambam thinks that will happen to young children who die young.
There's a lot of people who get upset with a lot of things that the Rambam states, right? And Mirtz Hashem, we will continue with that next week. But it's important to get from the outset that this is a serious challenge for the Rambam that he wants to really confront head on, because of the fact that A, the Torah itself seems to imply this, and the reason revelation phenomenon that he has to deal with, and B, because there are many Jews out there who seem to believe this, and he's got to confront that as well. Okay, we'll pick up with that next week.
So what should we...
What should we do for next week? Okay, so one tool we're going to come back to later on because it's a very interesting statement. I mean, I want you to see just here, but it's an interesting statement in its own world. Take a look at... One five and one six. Yeah, take a look at 1:5, 1:6. Take a look at 1:17. And 1:26 and 1:27. I'll give you a little bit of a sense of some of the... Obviously, we're not going to go through every single corporeality issue here. Right? But we'll give you a little bit of a sense of some of the things. He's going to, you know, bring Unkelus onto his team, which is interesting. It's going to discuss the whole notion of Dibur Torah Kloshim Ve'Adam. And there's a number of interesting things. One, yeah.